Welcome to Fabulous After 50, the podcast for women wanting to make the most of their lives. My name is Julie Kennedy, and I am your host. Today, I welcome the seriously amazing Alexandra Plazinic to the show. Executive communications coach, keynote speaker, university lecturer with a PhD in communications, certified NLP trainer, and consultant with a vast professional experience in international organizations such as the United Nations and the European Commission. She was even recognized as one of the top 30 business coaches to look out for in 2022 by the New York City Journal. So quite a woman, one could say, and a really nice one too. Welcome, Alex. Can you start with a brief summary of who you are, what you do, and why you do it?
Thank you, Julie, and thank you for this opportunity to talk about a bit of my expertise and whether we can help your audience out there when it comes to public speaking and as well effective communications. And this is the work that I do. I help ambitious professionals overcome first fear of public speaking, effectively communicate, present with the impact, and really boost their self-confidence. And I was lucky to have been working with the women and men all over the world, from Europe to US to all the way to India and South Africa. And I'm happy that I'm able to as well share some of those experiences here.
Wonderful. And so just for the international side of things, you actually hail originally from Serbia and are now living in the Netherlands.
Yes, that's correct. I used to live as well in the US and Austria and Germany and France. So this is my fifth country.
Quite a global woman. Why did you decide to dedicate your career to that?
Well, I finished my PhD in communications, and before that as well, I have a master's degree in international relations and European studies. I originally come from a business background, so marketing, which is as well very much connected to communication. And right. Along the way, I really started to help people bolster their skills, so communication and presentation skills. And as well, working internationally, I've noticed that we all have actually the same fears and we all have similar struggles, even though we come from different countries. And then it really transitioned for me to help people transform their lives in a way to tackle the fear around public speaking, fear of, you know, showing up, fear of presenting yourself in the business environment, in the personal environment. And it really aligned to, as well to my purpose and what I want to do.
Right. And so it's not just in the corporate sphere, it's also one-on-one.
Yes, definitely.
People who need it. And as you say, I mean, public speaking is everywhere. I mean, I could interview you on many topics, but I do love what we will discuss today and helping people overcome their fear of public speaking. I was sort of just looking up some facts online, and in one American research paper, I read that the fear of public speaking is the most common phobia ahead of death, spiders, or heights, and that it affects about 73% of the population at different levels, of course. And there's even a name for it, glossophobia. And I think we can all relate to that in one way or another. And I mean, I know talking to people who sort of say, well, you know, I don't do much public speaking, but we do public speaking all the time, you know, whether it's, you know, I remember years ago being very nervous about public speaking, but that would also extend to, you know, at a dinner gathering when people would just suddenly ask me a question and I had to answer, you know, in front of a larger group, or, you know, even making speeches at a birthday party or whatsoever. So we're not just talking about making massive presentations. And I know from personal experience how liberating it can be when you actually free yourself from that fear. But that's another story. But before we delve into how to overcome and the tips that you have to share based on your vast experience, you mentioned before indeed that you have encountered this fear of public speaking all over the world in all different, you know, nationalities and groups and ages, etc. Do you have any idea why we have this fear? And also, are women more prone to it than men?
That's a great question. I've researched a bit about it, and actually the fear of public speaking comes from our tribal background, because we as humans, we like to be in tribes, so in groups. This is how we operated. And when you separate from a tribe or from a group, all of a sudden you become a prey. And this is when our fear gets activated. So we kind of kept with that in our body.
So if we're singled out of a group, then that's the breaking out of the tribe, as you say, but singled out as one person, as in, Julie, do you want to stand up and tell us? Then we feel like a prey.
Exactly. And that's why our public speaking fear is kind of something that we're born with and we kind of inherited. So when you stand out in front of a crowd, you feel like a prey that you will get be eaten up or
attacked or illegal,
or you will not survive. So this is actually the root of it.
That's fascinating. I didn't know. Yeah. And in your experience, are women more prone to this than men?
In my experience, yes. I worked mostly with women, although men have as well the same fears. But in a way, it's as well how women were treated and how we grew up being, you know, expected to do a lot of things, being a perfect little girls as well. If you come from a family that expects you to be overachiever or achiever or to do some things perfectly. So this is usually what women deal with. Even though they're, let's say, more of actual fears because there was a trauma involved in public speaking. Maybe you didn't do so well in school and you had some experience that wasn't positive for you. So you kind of connected that with public speaking. But mostly with women, I see a lot of imposter syndrome as well.
Right. Yeah.
And this is what I've seen lately to be a really root for public speaking fear.
Because I guess conditioning, I mean, of course, we've come a long way in a short period of time, all things considered. But I dare say the conditioning is a lot there, that until not that very long ago, woman's role was back home, nurturing and looking after the family. She didn't do the public bit. She didn't do the standing up, you know, in public, because she didn't do the limelight sort of thing. It was considered, well, bad taste, and women should be protected and kept at home and out of, you know, they shouldn't be frightened by things, etc. So, I mean, I dare say that some part of the conditioning is that. And what you've just said, the imposter syndrome, indeed, the sort of less assertive side maybe of women that we still struggle with, whether it's because we have less testosterone, that we are less likely to consider that what we've got to say is worthy of being said out loud in front of other people, whereas men don't usually have that problem and don't feel held back by maybe less self-confidence or less self-esteem about whether what they've got to say is really worthy of interest to anybody else.
Exactly. I think men have more experience and they were, as you say, conditioned and as well supported in that role of being a man, being a leader, standing there in front of the audience, or, you know, being at home and being an alpha male or a person that everybody has to listen to. And now when women try to do that, then we're sometimes considered, you know, too aggressive, and it's not really accepted widely in the society, even on the professional field. And we try to kind of minimize ourselves and maybe become more assertive, or some women become more passive and reluctant to speak up.
Yeah, and as you said about the imposter syndrome as well, I remember reading also very interesting, you know, the fact that women are in a way more perfectionist. They feel that they will speak up if they have 100% the facts. Men only need to have 50% of the facts. They'll just gloss over it. And it doesn't matter if it's not quite right. Whereas for us, it does matter. Also, maybe because we don't want to be felt, you know, caught out, or just because we feel that it's being more authentic to actually know what we talk about. Okay, right. So, we have clearly defined that a lot of us have this fear of public speaking, and more or less why, as in that tribe being a singled out thing, which I think is actually fascinating. So how do we go about this? How do you help your clients go about overcoming this fear?
Actually, what I want everybody to be conscious about is that we all have fear. So Mark Twain said that there are two types of speakers, the nervous ones and the liars. So it is very common to have fear, and it's okay, because this is our response in our body that we get when we're doing something new and something that is very different what we've done before. You know, I even had a little bit nervous when I have to talk to you, like, before this podcast, because it's something new and you want to prepare and you want to project a certain message.
And you want to do your best. That it's good to have a little bit of fear as well, because that's what pushes us to do our best. You know, we'd just otherwise be slumped here, the two of us, going like, okay, well, you know, it's actually the,
absolutely,
as long as it's not too much, it's actually, you know, spurs us on.
Definitely, because it is an event, you know, whether we're talking on a podcast or we just stand up on a meeting and we want to share something, it is an event and you have to be on the heightened level of awareness. Right. So it's not just an event that you're, you know, home watching TV, back on your couch, you don't care, or just relaxing.
Yeah.
It is an event that you want to prepare, you want to do your best. And as well, there is an excitement to it, which is a particular task that I like, or that you expect something nice to happen, or that you're going to have fun or meet some new people. So it all actually falls in the same category, actually in the same mechanisms that work for our fear, and as well the mechanisms that work for our excitement.
Yeah, so anticipation, right? Because anticipation doesn't have to be negative. You know, you can be very much looking forward to something. So it could be negative or positive, but it's just the fact that indeed some things happen.
Definitely. This is really important to acknowledge. However, I always put a scale. So if somebody says I have a fear of public speaking or fear of showing up, then it's good to measure it. So from, you know, 0 or from 1 to 10. And then you can really see if that fear is something that you can handle or you need to work on it.
Right. So if I say, like I said in the global networking event in Amsterdam, when somebody said, oh, you know, look, speak like Julie, because I just delivered something off the top of my head very naturally. And I said, yes, well, I remember 15 years ago, the first time I had to do something in public, I literally vomited in the toilet.
Wow.
So, I mean, if we're talking about on a scale of 0 to 10, I mean, I was really pretty. My entire body was in shock at the idea that I had to go out there and talk. And it was only 40 women. Okay, so you get your clients to, first of all, on a scale of 0 to 10, delimit, okay,
exactly,
how big is this fear?
Right, because if it's something, let's say you can measure it now, like our audience can measure it now, what would happen if we just called you up now and, you know, join us at the podcast? And if you say, well, it's like around 3-4, then it's okay. It's something that you can handle. It's this nice excitement. It's a bit of a level of heightened emotions and it's fine. But if you say it's 9-10 and I would rather die, do this, then it's a very high level. And what happens is actually a paralyzing fear.
True. That's exactly what people say when they freeze. You know, I read in that article, I was studying that fear of literally freezing, you know, really not knowing what to say anymore.
Yeah, exactly. This is we get into our mode, you know, fight or flight. And then you can really freeze, or you can experience trauma again. If you had one, it can just deepen, or you can experience trauma at the stage. That's why I hear people sometimes say, oh, you know, public speaking, just do it, you know, go through that experience, just do it. And it doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, it can be very limiting and very hard to do that if you have the fear that high.
Right.
Because it is very actually counterproductive advice that somebody's giving you, just do it. You can't, and you will.
It's making you feel even more incapable, right? Because you realize that you can't just do it. So it makes you feel even more of a loser, then even more worried about it. So do you then have a different strategy for each? So if somebody's, say, 3-4, is there a certain strategy that you teach them to overcome that 3-4? Or do you say, well, look, 3-4 is perfectly normal. That means you're going outside your comfort zone and that you're, you know, eagerly sort of anticipating it. Would you say for a 3-4, there's no really difference?
There is always a place for improvement. So we work more on our relaxation techniques, or how to project your voice, or how to enjoy it. What I like the best about public speaking is that they really get from the place of entertainment, and that you're going to enjoy it and have fun and meet the people. And you know how exciting it is when you have the audience and people that are listening to you and the message. At the same time, of course, when it's higher fear of public speaking, I always like to dig in more into the cause of it. And you see, you know, to really define what exactly they're afraid from, what is behind that fear, why the fear is there, and really try to, you know, to work around it in order to tackle it at the root.
Right. So, I mean, that's something serious where you say this must be linked to either a trauma or, you know, a bad experience that we've had. Maybe it was even as a child where we were singled out and people made fun of us, or it can be just like a bad experience that we've then taken to mean that we're incapable of doing it.
Exactly. Sometimes we, you know, our mind works in a brilliant way, but sometimes we connect some things. Let's say one of my clients connected the microphone with her fear of public speaking. So every time she sees a microphone, you know, she freezes. Right. Without the mic, it's fine for her.
Okay.
And so this is something that was something really interesting, and I wanted to dig deeper into that.
So how did you help her overcome, if we just use that as an example? Mm-hmm. How did you help her then lose this sort of trigger response when she saw the microphone?
So what we did is, first of all, she explained me that it was actually a bad experience because once she had a mic and her voice just stopped, like she couldn't project it anymore. So this is this, what do you call anchor beam. So when she sees the microphone, that's an anchor for a negative thought, negative feelings, and her fear. So what I did is this collapse of anchors. So we kind of broke this connection, because what happens as well in trauma, you have the trigger and you have the situation and you have the emotions that are hyphening that. And that's the link. So when you break this link and you have the experience or the situation on one side and the emotion on the other side, let's say the level is decreased, then you don't have trauma. You don't have that connection.
So you use a lot of neurolinguistic programming in.
Yes, as well.
Okay.
I think it's a very, very good method. Actually, there are a lot of methods and techniques that can help in the public speaking, for sure.
Right. So there you really go back and you try to remove, as you say, collapse the anchors so that there's no automatic assimilation of two things, and maybe, you know, revisit that. Okay, maybe then she had a bad experience, but that doesn't mean that the next one is again, that it's not, that our past doesn't have to determine our future either. Okay.
Definitely.
Now you mentioned also voice, enjoying, relaxing. Are these tips that you also teach?
Yes, definitely. I think relaxing techniques are very important. They help us not just with our voice, of course, with our mind, with our body, with the way we're handling emotion. But when it comes to voice, let's start from there. We tend to close our jaws. So we kind of clench our teeth. And when we're afraid and when we want something, when we're anticipating something bad. So this is, let's say, our response to that. So a good way really to do that is really to relax our jaws. And you can yawn. It's very simple. Yawning can help. What I suggest as well is that you just take a bubble gum, let's say before your public speaking or an event that you feel anxious, because with those moments, you're relaxing your jaw.
So when you're chewing, so like we're chewing on a chewing gum or, okay.
We're chewing, yes. And actually we're tricking our mind and our body that we're actually eating.
Ah.
So when we chew, our mind and our body are in this state of relaxing, and meaning that we're having a meal and we're not having some dreadful task to do.
Yes.
So this is something that can help just before this.
And breathing, is there something, I mean, I imagine that when you're in a panic, you have that like shallow breath, you know, which actually
Absolutely.
Also doesn't help us think, right? It doesn't give our brain enough oxygen. So that also is linked then to that fear of our brain freezing because we're not even giving it enough oxygen. So do you also teach techniques to deepen that breath that you do just before?
Absolutely. Yes. So it's a great way to really relax our solar plexus and our diaphragmal level, because this is where self-confidence is, you know, from the solar plexus. We really want to shine through your audience. And this is where we feel the most confidence or the most nervousness. So as you mentioned, it's really important to inhale and exhale, and actually to have your exhale longer than your inhale.
So why is that?
So this is proven actually to reduce the anxiety before an event, because they did a research actually when they had the inhale and exhale the same length.
Right.
And it didn't trigger the relaxation, or scientists say this rest and digest state. But if your exhale is a little bit longer and can be 2 or 3 seconds longer than your inhale, then you're activating the relaxation in your body and as well in your mind.
So as a tip to our audience, do you have actually like an example of how many seconds in and how many seconds out? And is there also a break in between, as in you hold as well?
You can hold as well. The technique that I would like to propose here is that you can inhale for 7 seconds and exhale for 11 seconds.
Okay.
And you can do that for 5 to 10 minutes before the big event.
And you're not going to turn blue and faint on the floor.
No, not at all. If that's long, you know, for some people it's long, like 7 seconds, 11 seconds, you can reduce it to 3 seconds inhale and 5 seconds.
But as long as the exhale is longer than the inhale. And so you try and do that just before. And I mean, I guess you can just go to the toilet, right? Or whatever, you know, you don't want to look as if you're about to give birth. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it really relaxes your belly area and release solar plexus. And this is where we feel the most anxious. And it just like put us out of this fight or flight mode. Yeah. And it put us in the state of rest and digest that we want to be.
Right, rest and digest. Okay. Well, that sounds lovely. Okay. So that's, those are the two very good ones. And what was the other one you said? Voice. Because of course, I think that's what we're scared of. Well, first of all, that you don't hear it. But then, I mean, I remember at the beginning when I did start talking, my voice somehow suddenly seemed to pitch quite a bit higher. And I didn't seem to know how to control that. You know, it was the nerves, I think, which was making my voice get more and more hysterical. And of course, I wanted to sound confident and posé, you know, not like some sort of hysterical chicken there squawking in the background. But how can you actually do that?
Exactly. That is as well very much connected to our nervousness, our anxiety. So when you're more calm as well, your voice is calmer, and this is how you're projected. So let's do a bit of a reverse engineering. And first, you can try the breathing techniques and as well relax your jaw as much as you can. And what is as well a technique that I use? Now the podcasters cannot see it, but I have a pen. And basically, you put a pen between your teeth.
Right.
And with that, you can maybe read one paragraph or one text to get you prepared for your speech.
So
because what
work?
It does,
oh yeah, sorry.
Yes, because what it does as well, it unclutches your jaw, and you project voice much easier. So you don't have to try to, like, let's say, be louder or reach more people. So it's kind of, when you try it afterwards, it's like your voice is kind of wider.
Okay, that's a very interesting trick.
Yes, you can try it.
Yeah. I find it fascinating how, I mean, from having gone to somebody myself, you know, who, as I say, vomited in the toilet, to somebody who now, I mean, I presented the Women Economic Forum in front of 500 women in The Hague. No problem. I mean, I enjoyed it. It's fascinating to see how you can overcome and how you can develop tips which also help you, you know, be able to feel more confident as well on stage. And you know, I mean, I always say, you know, are we allowed notes or not notes? I was actually talking about that with my partner, who's got to make a speech at work on Thursday. And it's a big thing, and there's a big issue going on. And I was saying, well, you know, my gut reaction is if you need to take, you know, a little sheet of paper with a few, you know, words on that, just to reassure yourself and to make sure that you tick all the boxes of what you want to say, I would say do it. And I mean, I do. But I mean, is it considered professional to have a cue with you, to have some paper or something?
It is. It really, I think, depends on the context and what is it that you want to project. But what I focus mostly, and I think that is most important, is the, you know, energy that you give out, the level of your self-confidence.
Right.
And whether that you're using props or not, whether you're, you know, having your notes or your slides, it's fine. I think the most important thing is really that you feel confident. And what you said is, you know, that you feel that you're having the time of your life, and people feel that, because we do connect on the energetic level, and people feel your emotions and whether you're in a good mood or not. And then the other things are just, let's say, technical.
Right.
And sometimes they don't even get noticed because they're so captivated by your story.
And that's what you say, isn't it? It's the story and the energy and the being sort of authentic. And I think the advantage when we're talking about a 50 plus audience is that we maybe have that little bit more, you know, self-confidence, or that we know that it doesn't have to be perfect. I mean, of course, I think most of our fears are also related to, what if I don't know? You know, what if they ask me a question and they actually know more about it than I do? I mean, that used to be the sort of thing which would terrify me. Whereas now, if I don't know, I sort of say, oh, you know, really good point. You know, I'll look that up and I'll get back to you. I don't know. And you're okay with your not knowing. And it's just being true to who you are and making jokes. And yeah, I mean, I use humor a lot. And as you said, it's that self-confidence, but we can fake it. I mean, like you, I am always nervous. We're both part of this Global Woman network where we need to pitch each time. I mean, I look and sound as if this is something that I do, you know, but it's not true. I am nervous and I prepare. I prepare my text in advance. I know what I want to say.
Right.
But you can still, you know, sort of fake it that you start enjoying it. And then you see the audience react to you. And then you're actually on your own. Then you're okay, right?
Exactly. And when you say you fake it till you make it, actually, it works very well. And now it's supported by the Harvard researcher, Amy Cuddy. And she coined this term using this power woman pose.
Oh,
this is something that is as well. It's called embodied condition.
Okay.
Because we do have a connection between our mind and body. And at the same time as we can use our bodies to boost our minds and change our emotions, we do it vice versa all the time. So we use our mind and our emotions to change as well. So what happens is, if you've seen a person that is not in a good mood, let's say, you could recognize it right away, right?
Yeah.
You can see that.
They speak so hard, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You see that in their facial expressions, in their bodies. It's very different when you see a self-confident person or a person that is very positive when in a good mood. So what happens here is that with our bodies, if we change the posture, we can actually change our mood and change our level of self-confidence. And now it's proven by the research that if you stand in a position of a power woman for 2 minutes before, let's say, going to an interview or a public speaking event, then your performance will be so much better and you will feel more self-confident.
Wow. So that's before. We're not even talking about standing in a certain posture on stage. It's getting yourself. Okay. So how? I mean, of course, we're not using video here. So what is the power woman posture?
So you straighten up your spine, of course. Your head is a bit lifted, but not a lot. And you put your hands on your hips and stand with your legs apart.
Sort of in a ladylike way, right?
Yes.
Okay. Ready to shoot. Okay.
If you can do it, if you can stand, it really just helps if you just straighten your spine and sit properly as they taught us in school, because it really helps us not just, you know, physically, but emotionally you start to feel better.
Right.
Because again, you are influencing your emotions and your mind with your body posture. And this is this embodied cognition that we just have it as humans. So we as well.
Fascinating how we work, right? And actually, I was just having one flashback. I studied NLP years ago. And I remember that thing about, you know, literally when we say to people, you know, who are down or depressed or worried, you know, it literally is that. Just the fact of looking up does, you know, it's
just wonders.
Related to our mind. Isn't that fantastic? But all these tips you've shared are fantastic because they're things that anybody can take with them and whatever sort of public speaking we're talking about. Nearing the end here, is there anything else you needed to or wanted to ask? I mean, I have the feeling you have such a wealth of knowledge. You could probably do two or three of these episodes. We can have part one, two, and three.
But today, I think that's it. I just really want our audience to define mind, body, and emotions and this connection, and as well with a little tricks and tips that you can do and activate those parts that can really help you in feeling more confident, being more positive, and as well having a much better performance.
And knowing we can all do this, right? We can all do
this.
For the people who would like to see this a bit further, who want one-on-one support, is this what you do? Is it only face-to-face, or do you also coach public speaking online?
I do coach online one-on-one as well. I have workshops and trainings, but you can as well visit my website, aplazinich.com, or contact me through LinkedIn and we can set up a call and see if we can work together.
Fantastic. This is how we make it all so much better. Thank you very much for that, Alex. I will be putting all your information in our notes, the notes around our podcast. Thank you for sharing your time and your expertise, and good luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
For the rest of you out there, I hope you have been listening, maybe even had a pen and paper, because there were some extremely valuable tips that we can all, you know, put in place there. So first of all, I think it was being aware of what sort of level of nervousness you have. You know, if it's a 3-4, it's that healthy one which will help you make a great performance. And you can embed that with relaxation, voice, and the tips that Alex shared with us. If it's a 9-10, it might be a good idea to see somebody, but like Alex, for example, deeper look at, you know, what are the causes and to get some help to move it out. The other tips were fantastic, which we can all do, you know, the clenching the jaw, the yawning, the bubble gum, and all of that to relax. Also the pen between the teeth in order to deepen the projection of our voice. For the relaxation, the inhale on 7 and exhale on 11. If you want to do less than that, that's fine, but make sure that the exhale is longer than the inhale. And of course, I did love this power body pose. So maybe not completely the John Wayne ready to shoot, but standing up very straight, your neck a little bit higher, hands on your hip, and sort of a slightly wider leg stance. And do that for 2 minutes before. So I'm going to meet you all next time we have a networking event in the toilets, all standing in our power woman pose, so we can take on the world and share our messages, because they deserve to be shared. Thank you very much. Thank you, Alex. Thank you to all for listening, and more next week.
Thank you for listening. Now it is up to you to make it happen. Join me next week for another dose of empowering vitamins as we navigate the marvelous roller coaster we call life. Subscribe and let me know what you think we should be talking about. Take care out there.